in Harlem. Steve is sitting on a bench, and James King sits with him. King is bleary-eyed and smokes a joint as he talks.
Yeah, well, you know, I found what a payday is. You know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess.
You guess? What you guessing about? When I'm so flat, I ain't got enough money to pay for a can of beer. I need to put together a payroll crew. Get my pockets fat. F-A-T. I talk to Bobo, and he's down, but Bobo liable not to show. When he shows correct, but sometimes he act like a spaceman or something.
Bobo's not Einstein.
Whatever. You don't need to be an Einstein to get paid. All you gotta have is heart. You got the heart?
For what?
To get paid. I gotta sure get over. You know that drugstore got burnt out that time? They got it all fixed up now. Drugstores always keep some money.
That's what Bobo said?
Yeah. All we need is a lookout. You know, check the place out. Make sure ain't no badges copping some Z's in the back. You down for it?
Steve looks away.
So, what is it?
This phrase is repeated as the camera moves farther and farther away, growing louder and louder as Steve and King become tiny figures in the bustling mosaic of Harlem.
Sunday, July 12th. They had scrambled eggs, potatoes, and corned beef hash for breakfast. A lot of guys don't go to breakfast on Sunday, and the ones that do can just about eat as much as they want. The guy behind the steam table put a lot of food on my plate and gave me a smile. In here, you don't smile back at people who smile at you, so I just walked away. They had church services, and I went. There were only 9 guys in the service, and 2 of them got into a fight. It was a vicious fight, and the minister called the guards. They came in and started saying things like, "Break it up," and "Okay, back off." But they said it in this calm voice, as if nothing was really going on, and they didn't care if the 2 guys were fighting or not. We got locked down because of the fight, and we were told we had to stay in our cells until 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock is when the visiting hours start on Sundays. In the cell, we played bid whist, and another fight almost started when one of the guys thought somebody had dissed him. I think I finally understand why there's so many fights. In here, all you have going for you is the little surface stuff, how people look at you and what they say. And if that's all you have, then you have to protect that. Maybe that's right. When we got out, most of the guys drifted into the recreation area, and somebody put the television on. There was a baseball game on, but it didn't look real. It was guys in uniforms playing games on the deep green field. They were playing baseball as if baseball was important, and as if all the world wasn't in jail, watching them from a completely different world. The world I came from, where I had my family around me, and friends and kids I went to school with, and even teachers, seemed so far away. I looked down in the street from the corridor leading to the recreation room. Downtown New York was almost empty on Sundays. The thousands of people who streamed through the streets on weekdays were away in their homes. I was looking for Jerry. They didn't allow kids in the visiting area, which was funny. It was funny because if I wasn't locked up, I wouldn't be allowed to come into the visiting room. At 1:15, some women were down in the streets calling up to other women. Then I saw my parents and Jerry. Jerry was tiny in the street, standing on the corner. The window was screened and I knew he couldn't see me, but I raised my hand anyway and waved to him. I wanted to tell Jerry that I loved him. I also wanted to tell him that my heart was not greatly rejoicing, and I was not singing praises. My parents came, one at a time, and they were both upbeat and full of news about the neighborhood and about Jerry. "Did you see him down in the street?" Mama asked. I told her yes and tried to smile with her. Her eyes were smiling, but her voice cracked. In a way, I think she was mourning me as if I were dead. They left, and there was still too much Sunday left in my life. I looked over the movie again. I need it more and more. The movie is more real in so many ways than the life I'm leading. No, that's not true. I just desperately wish this was only a movie. Monday is the state's case. This is what Miss O'Brien said. Monday they bring out their star witnesses.
Monday, July 13th. Fade in, interior, courtroom. There is a feeling of expectation in the air. Petrocelli, Briggs, and O'Brien are talking to the judge. Petrocelli makes a joke, and O'Brien laughs briefly. They return to their respective tables, and the judge nods to the court stenographer, who straightens up, ready to take down the day's proceedings.
The state calls Laurel Henry.
Camera swings to the rear of the courtroom, an assistant district attorney ushers in Laurel Henry. The diminutive 58-year-old retired school librarian is neatly dressed. She was once a beautiful woman and still quite attractive, looking far younger than her stated age. She moves with grace to the witness stand, avoiding looking at either the jury or the defendants.
Mrs. Henry, do you remember an incident that occurred last December in Harlem?
Yes, I do.
Can you tell us about that incident?
My granddaughter had a cold. It was just a few days before Christmas, and I didn't want it to ruin her Christmas. I had taken her to Harlem Hospital, and they said it wasn't serious, but she was still coughing. I went into the drugstore to look for some cough medicine. I was looking over the medicines, trying to figure out which would be best for her, when I heard someone arguing.
Do you know what the argument was about?
No, I don't.
Then what happened?
The store owner, Mr. Nesbitt, came over to see what the argument was about, and I heard one of the men who was involved in the argument say to him, ask him where the money was.
How sure are you that this is what he said?
Not that sure. It's what I think I heard.
And what did you see during this time?
I saw two young men engaged in an argument. Then I saw one of them grab the drugstore owner by the collar.
She grabs her own collar to demonstrate.
And then what did you do?
And then I left the store as quickly as I could. I thought there might be trouble.
Mrs. Henry, do you recognize anyone present today in this courtroom who was also in the drugstore on the day to which you are referring?
The gentleman sitting at that table was one of the men arguing.
She points to King.
Let the record show that Mrs. Henry has indicated that the defendant, James King, was one of the men she saw in the drugstore on that day. Mrs. Henry, do you remember the day you witnessed the incident at the drugstore?
The 22nd of December. It was a Monday. I didn't want Tracy, that's my granddaughter, missing too much school. I thought if she could get through the next day or so, she would be all right because of the Christmas break.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Cut to Briggs at podium.
Mrs. Henry, did you have occasion to see some photographs of Mr. King?
Yes, I did, at the police station.
You heard about the robbery and the death of Mr. Nesbitt and you went to the police, is that correct?
That's correct.
And the police showed you a series of pictures. Would you say 1,000 pictures?
1,000? No, maybe 30 to 40.
Maybe 20?
I think more than 20.
Would you say 27?
I couldn't say for sure.
So the truth is that the police showed you a few photographs and asked you to cooperate with them in finding a killer. Is that correct?
More or less.
More or less? Well, I want to get to the truth of this matter, Mrs. Henry. The police did show you the pictures, and they were looking for your cooperation in finding a killer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mrs. Henry, while you were looking over the pictures, were there moments of hesitation? Were there moments when you weren't quite sure? Or did you recognize Mr. King as soon as you saw his picture?
I didn't recognize him at first, but then I did. The pictures look different than he does in person.
So how did you recognize him if he looks different in person than he does in the photographs?
I finally recognized him. And when I see him now, I recognize him.
Mrs. Henry, were you ever given a description of Mr. King, ever told how much he weighed or how tall he was?
No, I was not.
You said that someone said something about Mr. Nesbitt showing them where the money was. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you remember who said that? Was it the man you think was Mr. King?
I don't know.
You testified in a pretrial hearing that you had some trouble testifying that Mr. King was involved in this event. Is that correct?
I have trouble testifying against a black man, if that's what you mean.
But somehow you don't have trouble identifying Mr. King at this time. Isn't that so?
I think I'm doing the right thing. I think I'm identifying the right man.
Did you ever identify Mr. King in a lineup?
Yes, I did.
Was that before or after you saw the photographs?
That was after I saw the photographs.
And how many men were in the lineup?
I believe there were six.
Six? Only six. Nothing further.
Cut to O'Brien sitting at the table. She looks up toward the judge and shakes her head.
No questions, Your Honor.
Is there any question in your mind that the man you identified from photographs is the same man who sits at this table?
No, there is not.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Medium shot of Briggs, his associate, and James King.
When this guy gets on the stand, I want you to take notes. Just write down any questions you want us to ask him.
Like what?
Don't worry about it. We just need the jury to know we're challenging this guy.
Richard Bobo Evans, Your Honor.
Camera pans to side of courtroom, where a court officer opens the door and leans out. He holds the door open until Richard Bobo Evans enters. He is a big man, heavy and ugly. His hair is uncombed, and his orange prison jumpsuit is wrinkled.
Your Honor, could we have a sidebar?
Briggs, O'Brien, Petrocelli, and court stenographer go to side of judge's bench, where they speak in whispers.
Why is he dressed in a prison uniform? The prosecution is going to try to connect him to my client. With him in prison gear, that prejudices my client.
He refused to put on a suit. We made the offer.
It's still prejudicial.
To tell you the truth, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. This guy looks like a basket case, and he's going to act like one. I don't want to hold the case up while you convince this guy to wear a suit. Let's get on with the case.
I'd like to establish the objection.
Okay, and I'll overrule it. Let's get going.
They return to their respective previous positions, with Petrocelli at the podium.
Please state your full name.
Richard Evans.
Mr. Evans, how old are you?
22.
And are you sometimes known by another name, a nickname or a tag?
They call me Bobo.
Now, Mr. Evans, do you know the people who are seated at these two tables, Mr. Stephen Harmon and Mr. James King?
Yeah, I know them.
How long have you known them?
I've been knowing King all my life. I just met the other guy before the robbery went down.
Before we go any further, Mr. Evans, I notice that you are wearing a prison uniform. What is your current status?
I'm doing a heavy and a half up at Greenhaven.
Will you explain to the jury what a heavy and a half is?
7.5 to 10 years.
And what are you doing the time for?
Selling drugs.
And you've been arrested before?
I've been arrested for breaking and entering, grand theft auto, and one time for taking a car radio, and one time for fighting a guy that died.
So the arrest for fighting a guy that died was manslaughter, is that right?
Yeah. I got 3 years.
I think the record will show you got 5 to 10 years and served 3. Is that correct?
Whatever.
Mr. Evans, can you tell me what happened on the 22nd of December of last year?
Me and King planned a get-over, and we done it.
Can you explain to the jury what this particular get-over was?
We hit a drugstore.
Can you tell me as much as you can about the plan and about what actually happened?
We went over to the place and sat down on a car outside. Then we got the sign from him.
Let the record show that Mr. Evans is pointing toward Mr. Harmon. Go on.
Objection.
Sustained. Is he identifying him or not?
Can you identify the man from whom you got the sign that everything was all right?
That's him, sitting next to the woman with the red hair.
Let the record show that Mr. Evans is identifying Mr. Harmon. Go on.
So we got the sign that everything was cool. King took a hit on some crank we had, and then we went in. We started a beef with the dude behind the counter. He came up with a chrome and started shouting and stuff.
A chrome?
Yeah, a gun. Anyway, King was trying to get the gun from him, and I was going for the money. Then I heard the gun go off. I looked over and saw the guy falling down, and King was holding the chrome. We grabbed what we wanted and split. That was it.
What else did you grab besides the money?
We took some cigarettes and left.
Then what did you do?
Then we went down to that chicken joint over Lenox Avenue, across from the bridge. We got some fried chicken and some wedgies and some sodas.
Who was with you at this time?
Just me and King.
When did you find out that Mr. Nesbitt, the drugstore owner, was dead?
The word was in the street that night.
What happened to the money you got from the robbery?
Like I said, we spent some of it on fried chicken and wedgies. Then me and King split the rest.
You indicated that Mr. Harmon gave you the all-clear signal so you could proceed with the robbery. Is that right?
Yeah.
And was he to get part of the money?
Objection. If Miss Petrocelli wants to testify
in... Sustained. Sustained. Let's not get carried away. Rephrase the question.
Was anybody else to share in the money?
The little Puerto Rican boy was supposed to get a taste, and King's friend was supposed to get a taste.
You said that you received a sign from Mr. Harmon. Can you tell me what that sign was?
He was supposed to tell us if there was anybody in the drugstore. He didn't say nothing, so we figured it was all right.
And you definitely saw Mr. Harmon coming from the drugstore, as planned?
Right.
As far as you know, was the shooting of Mr. Nesbitt accidental?
I asked King what happened, and he said he had to light him up because he was trying to muscle him. He was an old man, but he was strong like some of them old West Indian brothers. You know what I mean?
Can you tell me how it was that you were arrested?
I sold the cigarettes to this guy. His name is Bolden. Golden, something like that. Then he sold some to a white boy, and then the white boy dropped a dime on him, and he dropped it on me. Once it got going, it was 411, 911, 711. I guess they was dropping dimes with 800 numbers, too. Then the cops came and started talking to me. I said I didn't know nothing about it, but then I got busted on a humble and went down.
Can you explain to the jury how you were busted?
Man, this lame-looking brother with an attaché case came up to me and said he wanted to cop some rocks. I was so knocked out by this bougie dude asking for crack that I slept the real deal. I laid the rocks on him, and he slapped the cuffs on me. Cops don't usually show lame. That was definitely not correct.
He carried an attaché case?
Can you believe that crap?
Mr. Evans, you were promised a deal for your testimony. Can you tell us what that deal is?
If I tell what happened, the truth, then I can cop a plea to a lesser charge and pull 10 to 15.
Are you telling the truth today?
Yeah.
Nothing further.
Cut to Asa Briggs. He shuffles through some papers, nods approvingly, and then approaches the podium from which he will question Bobo.
Mr. Evans, you admit that you were in the drugstore. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You also admit that you were in the drugstore to commit a felony. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So you were in the drugstore committing a felony, the felony in this case being robbery, and during the commission of that felony, a man was killed.
Yeah.
So by your own admission, under New York state law, you are guilty of felony murder for which the possible penalty is 25 years to life without parole.
So?
And you haven't been tried for this crime yet. So if you ever want to walk the streets again, you had better find somebody to take the weight. Isn't that correct?
What you saying? Am I trying to cop a plea? I just told you I was trying to cop.
And we know who you are, don't we? You're the dope dealer and the thief who could see a man killed and then go over to a fast food place and have a nice meal. That's who you are, right?
I didn't have nothing to eat all day.
So after you killed Mr. Nesbitt...
I didn't kill him.
As far as this jury knows, you are the only man who admits being in the drugstore when Mr. Nesbitt was killed. You admitted to planning the robbery. You also admitted to taking the cigarettes, and you admitted to being there when Mr. Nesbitt was lying on the floor of the store he had worked so hard for. But now you blame somebody else for the killing to get a break for yourself. Isn't that right?
I think King was high or he wouldn't have shot the dude. He didn't have to shoot him. He's the cause of me being in this mess.
Not you. You didn't want to do the stick-up.
Man, later for you.
Nothing further.
Miss O'Brien?
O'Brien speaks from her chair.
Mr. Evans, when did you have a conversation with Mr. Harmon about this robbery?
Petrocelli smiles.
Perhaps counsel wants to approach the podium?
O'Brien stands and goes slowly to the podium, looking at her notes.
I didn't have a conversation with him. He's King's friend.
So let me get this straight. What was Mr. Harmon supposed to do if there were cops in the drugstore?
Give us a signal.
And what was that signal to be?
Something to let us know there were cops in there.
And if there were no cops in there, what was he supposed to do?
I don't know.
You said you planned the robbery with Mr. King. Didn't he tell you?
I thought King had it hooked up. He told me he had everything straight.
You testified that you did not have a gun when you entered the drugstore. Is that correct?
Right.
How did you know? How do you know now that the gun that was used was not brought into the drugstore by whoever it was you were with?
King said he didn't have no gun.
So you're relying pretty much on what you've been told about this robbery. Is that correct?
Except what I seen.
And what you saw was when you were actually involved in the holdup?
That's right.
Did you ever talk to Osvaldo?
I said a few words to him.
You told him that he had better participate in the crime or you would hurt him?
He wanted in.
But he testified that the only reason he was involved in this stick-up was that he was afraid of you.
I wouldn't bring anybody into a serious jam unless they wanted to be there. You can't rely on nobody that don't want to be there.
When you were in the drugstore and you have admitted being there, did you see anyone else in the store?
I didn't see the lady.
But you know now that a lady was in the store, is that correct?
Yeah.
How did you find that out? From Mr. King?
Detective told me.
King told you about the plans or what he wanted you to know of them. The police told you about the witness. Are you sure you were there?
I told you I was there.
As a matter of fact, your deal depends on your admitting you were there, doesn't it, Mr. Evans?
Yeah.
Did you talk to Osvaldo after the stick-up?
No.
Did you talk to Mr. Harmon?
No.
How about the money? Weren't you supposed to split the money up?
When we found out the guy was dead, we decided to lay low.
Who is the we who decided to lay low?
Me and King.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Cut to Petrocelli adjusting her glasses.
Prior to the robbery, just before the robbery, what were you and Mr. King doing?
Just before we went in?
Yes, just before you went in, what were you doing?
Waiting for him to come out.
Who are you referring to when you say him?
Him, that guy sitting over there.
Let the record show that Mr. Evans is referring to Steve Harmon. Nothing further.
But you had not spoken to Mr. Harmon prior to the stick-up?
No.
And you didn't speak to him after the stick-up or split any money with him?
I told you, we decided to lay low. We would have given him his cut later when things cooled down.
Did that time ever come?
I don't know what King did.
But as far as you know, there was no money given to Mr. Harmon.
I don't know what King done.
Nothing further.
Cut to jurors from Steve's point of view. One juror, a middle-aged man, looks directly toward the camera for a long time. The camera then moves away as if Steve has turned away from the accusing stare.
The people rest.
Fade in. Concentric colorful circles and hurdy-gurdy music. A hustling, bustling cartoon city comes alive on the screen. Then a small cartoon man, dressed in an old-fashioned nightgown, looks out his window.
The people rest!
On screen, all cartoon characters stop. Cars screech to a stop. And then everybody sleeps. The people are resting. Cut to interior courtroom.
I'll take motions this afternoon after lunch. The defense can start its case the first thing in the morning. It's a nice day out, and we'll adjourn and give the jury the rest of the day off, unless somebody has an objection.
We see the jury leave. Then the various parties leave in turn. We see Mrs. Harmon come over and talk to O'Brien. Steve's mother is disturbed as a court officer comes over and stands near Steve. Fade out.
Tuesday, July 14th. Miss O'Brien came to see me this afternoon. She looked tired. She said that Bobo's testimony hurt us a lot, and that she had to find a way to separate me from King. But King's lawyer wanted to make sure the jury connected us because I looked like a pretty decent guy. She talked to me for almost an hour. Several times she patted me on the hand. I asked her if that meant that she thought we were going to lose the case. She said no, but I don't believe her. I am so scared. My heart is beating like crazy, and I'm having trouble breathing. The trouble I'm in keeps looking bigger and bigger. I'm overwhelmed by it. It's crushing me. It's a nice day on the outside. On the street below, people walk in what looks like a crisscross pattern across the narrow streets. There are yellow cabs inching along. On the corner, there's a cart that sells food, frankfurters or sausages, I guess, and sodas. People stand around buying what they want, then move away. It looks like something I would like to do. Move away from where I am. Tomorrow we start our case, and I don't see what we're gonna do. I hear myself thinking like all the other prisoners here, trying to convince myself that everything will be all right, that the jury can't find me guilty because of this reason or that reason. We lie to ourselves here. Maybe we're here because we lie to ourselves. Lying on my cot, I think of everything that has happened over the last year. There was nothing extraordinary in my life. No bolt of lightning came out of the sky. I didn't say a magic word and turn into somebody different, but here I am, maybe on the verge of losing my life, or the life I used to have. I can understand why they take your shoelaces and belt from you when you're in jail. Miss O'Brien made me write down all the people in my life who I love and who love me. Then I had to write down the people who I admire. I wrote down Mr. Sawicki's name twice. Mr. Briggs will present King's defense first. Miss O'Brien will go second. But she says she has to be careful, because if she says anything that makes King look bad and Mr. Briggs attacks her, it will look bad for me. We can use some friends, she said. When she left and I had to go back to the cell area, I was more depressed than I have been since I've been here. I wish Jerry were here. Not in jail, but somehow with me. What would I say to him? Think about all the tomorrows of your life. Yes, that's what I would say. Think about all the tomorrows of your life. When the lights went out, I think I heard someone crying in the darkness.
Fade in, interior, courtroom. Dorothy Moore is on the stand. She is a brown-skinned, fairly pleasant-looking woman. She looks sincerely at Asa Briggs.
And what time do you remember Mr. King coming to your home that afternoon?
3:30.
And you're sure of the time?
I'm quite sure, sir.
Nothing more.
Mrs. Moore, how often does Mr. King come to your house?
About twice a month. He's my cousin.
Do you remember the purpose of the visit?
He was just dropping by. He saw a lamp that he thought I might like, and he brought it by. We talked about Christmas coming up.
He bought the lamp for you?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember if he was working at the time? Did he have a job?
I don't think so.
And still, he took his money to buy you a lamp. You remember how much the lamp cost?
No, I don't.
But that was nice of him, wasn't it?
I think it was.
And you like him a lot, don't you?
I wouldn't lie for him if that's what you're saying.
Before this visit, when did you last see Mr. King?
I guess a few weeks before that. I don't know the exact date.
What kind of work was he looking for?
Just a job, I don't know.
Does he have a driver's license?
I don't know.
You really don't know a lot about your cousin, do you?
I know, I saw him that day.
And what do you do for a living?
I do day's work, but I wasn't working that week because I had hurt my ankle. I went to the doctor that Monday, and you can check that.
You don't have to verify what you were doing, Mrs. Moore. Did anybody see Mr. King at your home on that day?
I don't think so.
Do you still have the lamp? The lamp Mr. King so kindly bought for you?
It broke.
Should I take that to mean you no longer have the lamp?
They don't make things to last anymore. I think it was made in Korea or someplace like that.
Again, should I take that to mean that you no longer have the lamp?
I don't have it now, but I did have it.
Yes, of course. Thank you. Nothing further.
Cut to George Nipping on stand. He is about 50 and wears wire-rimmed glasses. He speaks precisely and generally makes a good impression.
Mr. Nipping, do you know, as a matter of fact, if Mr. King is right-handed or left-handed?
He's left-handed. I know that because when he was a kid, I went out and bought him a glove, a baseball glove, and I had to take it back because he was left-handed.
Have you ever known him to do anything of significance with his right hand?
No. I've never seen him use his right hand for anything.
We see Steve writing on a pad. Cut to the pad. O'Brien is writing a note under Steve's question, which reads, "What's that about?" She writes, "The wound was on the left side of the body, which might mean that the shooter was right-handed. It's a weak argument."
And for the record, how long have you known Mr. King?
I'd say about 17 to 18 years.
Thank you.
Cut to Nipping on stand facing Petrocelli.
Have you ever seen Mr. King shoot a man?
No, I haven't.
So when he shoots a gun, you don't know what hand he uses, is that right?
Objection!
If Mr. King was struggling with someone and the gun happened to be on the right side, do you know what he would do?
No, I don't.
Nothing further.
Cut to film class. Medium shot of Mr. Sawicki.
There are a lot of things you can do with film, but you don't have an unlimited access to your audience. In other words, keep it simple. You tell the story. You don't look for the camera technician to tell the story for you. When you see a filmmaker getting too fancy, you can bet he's worried either about his story or about his ability to tell it.
Cut to interior, room where lawyers meet with their clients. Split screen. One side is O'Brien, pacing nervously. On the other side is Steve, sitting.
You're going to have to take the stand. Look at the jury and let the jury look at you and say that you're innocent. I know the judge will tell the jury not to infer anything if you don't take the stand, but I believe that the jury wants to hear from you. I think they want to hear your side of the story. Can you handle it?
We see Steve nodding in the affirmative.
The prosecutor's strongest point against you is the connection between you and King. She is Bobo admitting to being in on the robbery and is linked to King. You've told me you know King. I don't know why you've chosen this man as an acquaintance, but it's going to hurt you big time if you don't manage to get some distance between you and him in the eyes of the jury. You're going to have to break the link. He's sitting there, looking surly. Maybe he thinks he's tough. I don't know. I do know you'd better put some distance between yourself and whatever being a tough guy represents. You need to present yourself as someone the jurors can believe in. Briggs isn't going to put King on the stand. That helps you. But when he sees us separating you from him, he's going to realize that his client is in trouble.
How do you know he won't testify?
King made a statement to the police when he was arrested. He said he didn't know Bobo, but the prosecution can prove that's a lie. So if he takes the stand, they can use his own statements against him, and he's cooked. If you don't testify, you'll just make the tie between you and King stronger in the mind of the jury. I think you have to testify. And the way you spend the rest of your youth might well depend on how much the jury believes you.
That woman said that King was with her.
Right, but Petrocelli didn't even bother with a lengthy cross-examination. Did you notice that? She dismissed Mrs. Moore with her tone of voice. A cousin who likes him testifies that he was with her. Big deal. Against all the evidence against him, it doesn't count for very much. His lawyer is going to rely on his closing argument to win the case, and I don't think that's going to be effective unless he's very, very lucky. Cases are won on closing arguments only on television, not in a real courtroom.
Single medium shot. We see Steve nodding, but he's looking down. We see O'Brien looking at him, studying him closely. She sits down and takes a deep breath. She puts a paper cup on the table.
Okay, Steve, now stay with me. We're going to play a little game. I'm going to take this cup and place it on the table. Then I'm going to ask you some questions. When I like the answers you give me, I'll leave the cup facing up. When I don't like the answers, I'll turn it upside down. You figure out what's wrong with the answer you gave me, all right?
Lie.
O'Brien doesn't answer. Then we see Steve nod his assent.
Did you know James King?
No.
O'Brien turns the cup down.
Yeah, casually.
O'Brien turns the cup up.
When was the last time you spoke to him before the robbery?
Last summer.
O'Brien turns the cup down.
I don't know for sure. I mean, he's not like a guy I talk with a lot.
O'Brien turns the cup up. Then, the camera moves farther and farther away from the pair. We see another prisoner and lawyer enter the room. We don't hear O'Brien's questions or Steve's answers, but we see O'Brien turning the cup. Fade to black. Fade in, interior, cell, at nighttime. We barely see the outlines of the inmates, two of whom are sleeping on the floor.
The prosecutor said I was lying. I wanted to ask her what she expected me to do when telling the truth was going to get me 10 years.
When it got you in the system, it ain't time to get all holy. You in the system? You needs to get out the system.
What's the truth? Anybody in here knows what the truth is. I don't know what the truth is. Only truth I know is I don't want to be in here with you ugly dudes.
Truth is truth. It's what you know to be right.
Nah, truth is something you gave up when you was out there on the street. Now you talking survival. You talking about another chance to breathe some air? 5 other guys ain't breathing.
You get up on the witness stand and the prosecutor talks about looking for truth when they really mean they looking for a way to stick you under the jail.
I've spent half my life in the joint, man. Where's my life? Where's my damn life?
We hear the toilet flush as scene ends. Cut to interior, jail. Steve is dressing for court. We see him checking out his hand, which is slightly swollen. Cut to Steve sitting in back of van. He holds his hands out in front of his face. They are shaking. Cut to Steve on stand.
Mr. Harmon, did you act as a lookout for the drugstore robbery or check out the store so that a robbery could be safely committed?
No, I did not.
Mr. Harmon, did you discuss with anyone that you would act as a lookout or that you would check out the store?
No, I did not.
Mr. Harmon, were you in the drugstore owned by Mr. Nesbitt, the victim, on the 22nd of December of last year?
No, I was not.
Are you sure in your mind that you know what a lookout would do?
Yes, I am.
One last question. Were you in any way involved with the crime that we are discussing here? To make it clear, were you in any way involved with the holdup and murder that occurred on the 22nd of December?
No, I was not.
Nothing further.
Cut to Petrocelli riffling through papers. She stops occasionally, looks toward Steve, and nods. Petrocelli leans back in her chair and visually confronts Dee for a long beat. Then she gets up and goes to podium.
Mr. Harmon, do you know James King?
I know him from the neighborhood.
You talk to him much?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. When was the last time you spoke to him before the robbery?
I don't know exactly, but it was during the school year.
Didn't you speak to him in December?
I don't think so, but I might have.
Which is it? You don't think so, or you don't remember?
Both. I mean, I might have spoken to him, but we don't talk about anything important enough to remember.
What do you talk about?
Usually I see him in the playground. Maybe he'd say something like, "Those guys can't play ball," stuff like that.
Those guys can't play ball. Did you ever see him play ball?
I don't remember seeing him play ball.
You have trouble remembering what you've seen?
No, but I've seen a lot of ball games. I watch a lot of ball games.
Are you nervous? Do you want to take a few minutes?
No.
You talk to Bobo sometimes?
Objection. We've been referring to the witness as Mr. Evans.
Sustained.
Have you spoken with Mr. Evans?
I might have said hi to him. I've never had a conversation with him.
You ever talk to Mr. Cruz? Osvaldo Cruz?
Yes, he's about my age. I've talked with Osvaldo.
What did you talk to Mr. Cruz about?
Same thing, mostly. About playing ball, or the weather, or what's going on in the neighborhood.
Did you hear Mr. Evans' testimony that... Let me put it this way. You heard Mr. Evans' testimony that you came out of the drugstore just before the robbery. Is that right?
I heard his testimony.
And are you saying it was just a coincidence that you were coming out of the store at that time?
Steve has a flashback of O'Brien turning over the cup. Cut to Steve on witness stand.
I don't know exactly when the robbery happened, but I know I wasn't in the drugstore that day.
So Mr. Evans was lying?
I don't know what he was doing, but I know I wasn't in the drugstore.
You heard Mr. Cruz say that you were supposed to go in and check the store out for cops. Is that right?
Objection. I believe the testimony was that Mr. Cruz was told that was the case.
Do you want the testimony read back?
I'll withdraw the question as framed. Mr. Harmon, do you remember Osvaldo saying that he understood you to be the lookout?
I heard him say that.
And according to you, Mr. Cruz was lying, too.
No, somebody could have told him that, but I know I wasn't there.
Then he must have lied, is that right?
Objection. The prosecution is soliciting an argument.
Withdrawn. Mr. Harmon, you say you weren't at the drugstore any time during the day of the robbery. Perhaps you would tell us where you were.
I don't know exactly where I was when the robbery took place. Most of the day I was going around taking mental notes about places I wanted to film for a school film project.
Well, if you don't know exactly where you were, can you tell me anyone who might know where you were?
I don't even remember where I was. When the detectives asked me where I was, I couldn't even remember the day they were talking about. They didn't ask me about it until weeks later.
Then how do you remember, what did you say, taking mental notes for a school film project?
I know that because I was planning to do the film in my neighborhood over the holidays.
Getting back to Mr. King, would you consider yourself a friend of his or an acquaintance?
An acquaintance.
Mr. Cruz, friend or acquaintance?
Acquaintance.
Mr. Bobo Evans, friend or acquaintance?
Acquaintance.
So you are acquainted with everyone involved in this robbery, is that—
Objection! She knows better than that! She knows better than that!
Sustained. The jury will disregard the last question. There is no one who is involved in this affair until the jury makes that decision. And yes, Miss Petrocelli, you do know better.
Nothing further.
We see Steve stand shakily and head back to the defense table. He looks out onto the onlookers and sees his parents. His mother forces a smile and his father makes a fist and nods emphatically. We see Steve sit down, start to pick up a glass of water, and have to put it down because his hand is shaking so badly.